today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Well, all right, gentlemen, are we ready to do this thing?
Yeah, man. I even brought my finest poncho.
That's nice, Greg. Just checking, though. Is that a real poncho or one of those crappy Sears ponchos?
Well, all right. Welcome to another episode of Rockin' the Suburbs. My name's Jay Rossman.
I'm Nick Klein.
Greg Lohman here.
And we are filling in for Jim and Patrick. They're on a bit of a break, and we're going to be filling in with a couple of episodes. Nick and Greg and myself, we have a podcast of our own. It's called You Should Check It Out, where we talk about some music stuff. It's kind of really just a copy of Rockin' the Suburbs, if I had to be honest.
Yeah, it's an admiration.
I'd maybe say more of a ripoff.
Right, exactly. You may know me or my voice from a previous episode of Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm also known as Intern John. I do some editing for Jim and Patrick.
But for continuity's sake, we're going to call you Jay throughout this episode.
Right.
Because that's how we know you.
Exactly. So, you know, we got three episodes to cover. We had a choice of pretty much any topic in the world, at least in the realm of music. And while I was doing the Meet the Intern John episode, it came up that the guys had never really done an episode on Frank Zappa.
Yes.
And he is one of our favorite artists of all time and a big inspiration to all of us.
Indeed.
And so we figured, well, we would take, you know, the next 3 days and kind of go through, give kind of a primer, if you will, on Frank Zappa and his legacy and his music and what he's all about. The first thing, right off the bat, there's just so much ground to cover with Frank. You know, where do you even start? For those of you who don't know Frank Zappa or aren't familiar with his music.
That's what we're here for.
I hope so. I hope that we're not going to turn anybody off. You know, he was self-taught in everything. He was a multi-instrumentalist. He was a composer of great renown, a band leader, inspired a lot of great musicians.
The dude was a thinker.
You could even go on and say, you know, he was almost, you know, he's an intellectual, an activist, a philosopher, you know, all kinds of things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He'd probably hate all those characterizations, but yeah.
But that's, he's not around to defend himself.
We're here to apply labels.
Right.
Yes.
So we were going through and trying to figure out where we would even start with and what songs we would pick, and that was a task in and of itself. But I thought we would just start with a song from an early album of his. This is off of Hot Rats, was released in 1969. This is an instrumental song called Peaches on Regalia, and this is a song that kind of brought the three of us together. We learned to play this in college for a project for music class. And yeah, it's a pretty interesting little track. This is called Peaches on Regalia.
That's a fun song. Yeah, Frank Zappa was like brilliantly irreverent. and like right from an early start, he was always interested in anything that was different or odd or didn't seem like appropriate. He was the early influences, like one of his earliest was he read on an article about a record label that the record label was so big that they even put out an album by this composer named Edgar Varese. And So he picked this album up and ran with it. And it's this, I mean, it's you know, for that to be the thing that jumps out at him and makes him want to grab some sort of album just because it's kind of described as the weirdest guy out there. And then when he saw the cover of it, like, it had this crazy mad scientist looking guy.
Right. Like, that kind of got him into... That was the thing that attracted him to it, you know, just to how weird this guy looked, right?
And I mean, I love this guy for a million reasons, but it wasn't until I really started, you know, learning more about him that I found out that Frank Zappa, he was a percussionist first,
right?
Which when you listen to like his recorded works, makes so much sense because he definitely puts a lot of time and effort into getting the percussion sounding very different than the rest of the band mix.
That's for sure.
Like out of the gate, the earliest stuff. So yeah, like Varese, and then Jay, what were some other ones? There was like in high school, he got into Johnny Guitar Watson, right?
Well, yes. Stravinsky for some of the more classical work. But then, you know, at some point he ended up getting into black R&B, and guys like you said, Johnny Guitar Watson, Howlin' Wolf, he really liked his vocal style.
He loved doo-wop, right?
Oh, yeah. Really big into 50s doo-wop. Yeah, and that's another thing. You know, he kind of came up earlier than a lot of the other guys in the 60s. You know, so he was pre-Beatles when he was starting his first band, or his first bands, really.
A failed drummer, yep.
Yeah, that's right. So many good quotes from Zappa, too. You know, he very quotable guy, but when you're talking about the range of the music that he was interested in, there's this one great quote from him. Since I didn't have any kind of formal training, it didn't make any difference to me if I was listening to Lightning Slim or a vocal group like the Jewels or Webern or Varese or Stravinsky. And to me, it was all just good music.
Yeah.
Right on. Yeah.
And I think high school is also where he made friends with Don Valet.
Captain Beefheart, right?
Captain Beefheart. Yeah, Captain Beefheart. So yeah, he kind of found his crew at an early age in high school and kind of just went and did his thing. He got into film early on. but it wasn't until he was 17 till he got his first guitar.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I knew that.
And yeah, and that became kind of like the instrument that he became obsessed with. And also music theory at a pretty young age when he talks about like being in middle school band, and the teacher would let him go ahead and like write music for the band to play just so they could hear what it was. And what a cool teacher. I mean,
right?
He probably kind of imposed that, but super creative dude right out of the gate.
You mentioned that he got his guitar at 17, and it actually reminds me of the tune that we're going to play next, Joe's Garage, where he actually mentions, he sort of gives a story of what it was like jamming with bands, you know, as a teenager. Yeah. And there's a line in there that always stuck with me where he's like, you know, there was a secondhand guitar, it was a Stratocaster with a whammy bar, and then bon, 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 and then it's like the cue for the guitar, like, lick that comes in, and it's just perfect.
I love it. He's never afraid to be kind of self-referential. For a song that was written, or at least was recorded in 1979, you know, after he had kind of reached more or less the pinnacle of his fame.
Unbeknownst to him, yeah.
Right, yeah. Going back and kind of writing a song, kind of a corny song by anybody else, about learning to play guitar in the garage. It's kind of neat. So yeah, let's give Joe's Garage a spin.
It wasn't very large. There was just enough room to cram the drums in the corner over by the Dodge. It was a 54 with a mashed up door and a cheesy little amp, with a sign on the front said Fender Champ and a second hand guitar. It was a Stratocaster with a whammy bar. We could jam in Joe's Garage. His mama was screaming, his dad was mad. We was playing the same old song in the afternoon, and sometimes we would play it all night long. It was all we knew and easy too, so we wouldn't get it wrong. All we did was bend the string like, hey, down in Joe's Garage. We didn't have no dope or LSD, but a couple of quarts of beer would fix it so the intonation would not offend your ear. And the same old chords going over and over became a symphony. We could play it again and again and again, cause it sounded good to me. One more time.
So I forgot that, I actually forgot that line in the thing, but that reminds me, that, like, he never did drugs. Like, the guy never did any drugs throughout his entire career.
Right.
Like, he tried weed once, right? And made him sleepy or something.
That's the story.
Yeah, he makes a comment about, like, coffee and burnt weenie sandwiches.
And cigarettes.
Yeah, mostly cigarettes.
I gotta say, man, like, when I hear that song, it kind of makes me a little emotional, man. It kind of brings me back to, like, when it's like, you know, the mom was screaming and the dad was mad. I'm just like, this is like what it's like
everybody's
a rite of passage.
Band. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. If you've ever been in a band, especially in high school, that's I mean, there's no other story to it, you know?
That's right.
Yep. Like, it's everyone goes through that. And, I mean, maybe not these days because everyone can just, you know, crank out records on their laptop. But at one point in time,
if you want to get a good drum track in there, yeah.
I'm sure that right now there's a lot of high school kids trying to jam in a garage, and it paints a great picture, and, you know.
And if you've got a drummer, then somebody's dad's yelling at you.
Exactly. And how he's singing about it so fondly, you know?
That's
like,
right. That's right.
Yep. You know, I really like that. And
yeah, there is a wistfulness in the song that you don't find in a lot of his other tracks.
That's right.
You know, but obviously it's the tip of the iceberg when it comes to Frank, you know?
Yeah.
It's just
endless.
Right? It's endless what this guy came up with.
We're trying
we're still catching up.
Yeah, and we're trying to jam all this into three episodes. We kind of wanted to treat this first episode as an overview of sorts, not, you know, necessarily a timeline, because that would take five episodes to do. But we did want to kind of touch on some of the bigger aspects of what he does. And there was another thing that occurred to me, guys. You know, humor definitely runs through most of his tracks. And, think a lot of people think of him as just kind of a writer of novelty and comedy songs. And he certainly had plenty of those. And I think some of the criticism that I've heard in the past about Frank from other musicians and other friends has been, well, it's just kind of this cheesy comedy stuff. But, you know, there's...
No, but it was an irreverence. It really was. That's why I was saying, like, an irreverence. Like, it was more an attempt to disrupt or, you know, anything to kind of make you pause, to kind of give you that, like, that moment of, what was that?
Yeah.
Or what did he say?
Yeah.
You know, and I think sometimes it maybe gets a little much in certain songs, especially the more you have to listen to some of those hit songs, which I love all of his stuff, but there's definitely some in there where it's like, we get it, we get the shtick.
Yeah. There are a lot of big famous fans out there of Frank Zappa. Matt Groening is one that comes to mind, the creator of The Simpsons. And I may be misquoting him on this, but he said that something that appealed to him about Frank's music from an early age was that it seemed like nobody was safe from the aim of Frank's satire, you know, and you can see that in shows like The Simpsons or Futurama, where he's willing to take on all comers, you know, and I think that all our sense of humor kind of reflects that as well.
Yeah,
I agree. Totally. There was a point, I think, early on in his early work where he would actually try to do some semi-serious social commentary. He's got his third album is We're Only in Front of the Money, and that whole album is just, it's him going back and forth between, like, yelling at the hippie movement.
Right.
But then also, he's got some really poignant lines in there about the parents of these kids. Like, don't you see that she just wants a hug? Stop with this plastic life and this coming home and drinking and driving in your Lincoln and all that.
It's almost like he was the counterculture to the counterculture.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
In many ways.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I wonder if in a later age, he tried not to take himself too seriously and that ended up being the ridiculous stuff.
He may have just run out of targets to...
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't think he ever really ran out of targets.
I don't think that was the case.
But yeah, I mean, speaking of the social commentary, one of the songs, his earliest social commentary songs that was featured on Freak Out is a song called Trouble Every Day. And that was actually a song that was heard by Tom Wilson, who, I don't know if you're familiar with him, he worked for Columbia. He was a producer for some of Bob Dylan's most famous albums. One of the very few African-American producers really making an imprint on mainstream popular music at the time. And he heard Trouble Every Day, which was written about the Watts riots, and he thought that was an important thing. So ironically, it's a social commentary song that kind of got Frank
connected.
And the Mothers, you know, a nationwide reputation.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Or not ironically at all. I mean, it's kind of wonder if he had stayed a little more towards the direct social commentary, if he would have had more traction. I think that the route he took was the route he was going to take no matter what, and I absolutely love him for it. But yeah, yeah, he definitely hit some nerves early on. But I mean, but throughout his entire career, nobody was off limits. And hopefully in the next three episodes, we can at least touch on aspects of that, because he was more than just like a goofball that ticked off a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's funny, though, with everything we've talked about so far, you know, he really was focused on his what he called his serious music, which he recognized, right, or at least he thought at a pretty young age, I'm probably not going to get paid for this. He tried doing movie scores, and that didn't really pan out, but I don't think he tried very hard. And so he used his rock music to essentially finance what he considered to be his serious work, which were actual, you know, compositions like chamber pieces and orchestral pieces.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that not a lot of people know either when they think of, you know, the song about the dog pee and, and that, disco boy.
That kind of dovetails into the arc that we're going to try to take for this whole this set of episodes. This is the intro. We're almost wrapped up here. But then I think the next episode, tomorrow, we're going to explore some of what some people call his commercial side or Frank Zappa as the rock musician. And then episodes three, we're going to go into the stuff that we like, the kind of weird out there avant-garde stuff and his instrumental works and his kind of more formal compositions. So that's that's the arc anyway. We'll see how it goes.
That's the plan.
Hey, man, I'm looking forward.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Well, it's just so funny. You know, we've been talking about this guy all of our lives, and when we get the opportunity to actually sit down and formalize a discussion about this stuff, it's like, well, where do you even start? Where do you go? How do you...
Jim and Patrick, hats off, man. This is hard.
Seriously.
This is hard.
Well, and for everyone who's worried, don't worry about that. Jim and Patrick will be back next week.
Yes, next week.
So stay tuned tomorrow. We will be back with you, and we'll be talking about, you know, his rock music, the fun stuff. And if you'd like to connect with Rockin' the Stubbs, feel free to send them an email. We won't get it, but Jim and Patrick, I assume, will. I don't know. That's what they say, anyway. Yeah. You can email them at rock@suburbspod.com. If you do the Twitter thing and Facebook and Instagram, you can connect to them at suburbspod. And if you like what you hear from us, you should check out You Should Check It Out, which is our podcast. And we're getting up. We got about four or five episodes up now. This is actually going to be episode six of ours. And you can check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all those.
If we get legal to sign off on all this.
Right, right. We'll see. We'll see. So, Greg, I think you know the way we do our podcast is we set it up. We do three different segments. Each of us lead into a song. So, Greg, why don't you pick the outro song? What do you want to play?
Well, I think that Montana would be a cool one to check out just because... It's one of the first ones I heard, and I just remember being, what the hell is this guy talking about? You
know? Well, I think it's clear as day, man. He's a dental floss farmer.
He's a dental floss guy. Yeah, dental floss tycoon.
Yeah, but it makes sense in its own weird way, but it doesn't make any sense. No. So,
I think
there's
a lot of money, in dental floss back then, I believe.
Well, the secret's out now.
Yeah. Yeah, we're too late.
Yeah. So, okay, guys. Well, thank you very much, and we will see you tomorrow.
All right.
See you tomorrow.
I might be moving to Montana soon, just to raise me up a crop of dental floss. Raising it up, waxing it down in a little white box that I can sell uptown. By myself, I wouldn't have no boss, but I'd be raising my lonely dental floss. I just might grow me some beans, but I'd leave the sweet stuff to somebody else. But then, on the other hand, I would keep the wax and melt it down, pluck some floss and swish it around. I'd have me a crop, and it'd be on top. That's why I'm moving to Montana. Moving to
to Montana soon. Gonna be a dental floss tycoon.
Yes, I am.
Moving to Montana soon. Gonna be a dental floss tycoon.
If you happen to like what you're hearing from us, you should check us out too, and you should check it out. That made zero sense whatsoever.
We got to keep that one.
Well, we have to do an Easter egg after the outro music plays. Then they put in an outtake at the end of it, so that can be okay.
I've got about an hour's worth of that.
Yeah.